Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing early on Monday morning. Joining us from New York City, where he's just made the trip up 95 after being a game four, an iconic game four, if you're a New York Knicks fan on Sunday between the Knicks and 76ers, Tim Bunteps.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he attended game four of Clippers Mavericks on Sunday. And almost saw one of the greatest collapses slash comebacks, and then saw one of the great moments of James Harden's playoff career. It's Ban McMahon.
Playoff P2, howdy partners. Got a lot to talk about.
We sure do. I'm joining from Los Angeles, where McMahon will be coming for game five, pivotal game five here in the next day or so, because the Clippers are coming back with home court advantage. We'll talk all about that. But
one main question we have to get to first, though.
Yes.
Are you picking up the check for dinner on Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm not going with you on Tuesday. I'll be buying on Monday. Oh. Will you be here on Monday?
Damn it. No, I guess I got to pay for my own dinner Tuesday. Well, let's go.
All right.
It's like, just like the Suns, checks not paid or cashed in.
Yeah, well, the Suns had a very whimpering end.
I would call it a fitting end.
We'll get
honestly,
to that in a
by Suns' exit standards, it was a spirited effort.
But well, in all honesty...
It's
not really appropriate to talk about the Suns, because I don't think the Suns are the headline story from what happened in Phoenix on Sunday night. I know that's where a lot of people will go. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people at our network will go there because of the star power on the Suns, and because it's always interesting to see a collision, a car wreck, which is what this has turned into. But I have to start with the Timberwolves, and I have to start with Anthony Edwards. Who this was his first closeout opportunity, and there's going to be more. And I don't know if he'll have many better than this, but he might, because he was an absolute killer down the stretch of this game. Just took the Suns, put them down, 6 of 7 shooting. I don't even know where to start. I'll just run off some numbers.
He was a killer the whole series long, yes. But it ended in. You know, he said, I want to kill everything in front of me. And that's exactly how he ended this thing.
6 out of 7 shooting for 16 points in the fourth quarter, 40 for the game. Just absolutely, you know, he was hitting contested 3-point shots. The Suns were desperate. They went small, which they've done throughout the whole season. He sniffed that blood right out and went right to the rim and threw down a couple hellacious dunks, one that was just soul-crushing with about 3 minutes to go. Turned his ankle twice during it. And
both ankles.
Was it both ankles?
Yes.
I thought it was just the right one.
No, he turned the right and the left.
He did. He stepped on Beal twice. And
didn't matter.
Still detonated at the rim.
Well, he stepped on Beal. He rolled his ankle stepping on Beal twice. He also stepped on Beal's throat throughout the entire night.
Through the entire series. We'll get to that in a second. Okay. As he's done throughout the season, he gets these injuries and he just shakes them off and just doesn't slow down. Like, it's one thing to play through an injury. This guy looks like he's got a major injury or a significant injury, and he just doesn't stop him. He's like a puppy. You can't.
No,
rubber bones. I don't know.
That's a mean puppy. That's a pit bull puppy.
I'm gonna just go through some of these numbers. Our stats and info group is just firing these numbers about Edwards at us. I don't even know how to process it. In the fourth quarter in this series, he averaged 10.5 points a game, most by any player in the playoffs so far. Shot 67%, 67% on threes. 100, didn't miss a free throw. What's this number about under 22? I got to figure this stat out. He's the fifth player under the 22 or younger with a 40-point game in a closeout game. The fifth. The others are Kobe, Durant, Magic, and Lou Alcindor before he was Kareem in 1970.
Honestly, I'm surprised Dwayne Wade's not in there, but that's
Dwayne
that's
Wade the came kind of, to the league when he was 21. He was practically 22 by the time he was in his first playoffs.
But and it's not the finals. It's a long way from that. But this reminded me of Dwayne Wade in the 06 finals, just absolutely ripping the soul out of a team and dominating both ends.
That was his third year. this, you know, well, this is Ant's third year too, but Ant only played 1 year in college. Dwayne played
fourth year.
This is Ant's fourth year.
Yeah. Point being, he's a 22-year-old.
Point is, he's a monster
who has zero fear of the bright lights, soaks them up. This series, a complete humiliation of the Phoenix Suns and
a coronation.
Yes. Evidence that, hey, the Timberwolves are for real. Like, it will not be an easy series for the Denver Nuggets next round. But there were two iconic moments in this series, bookending the series. Ant smiling and talking trash after hitting a ridiculously tough three in Katie's face in the opener. And Ant blowing by $50 million Bradley Beal and throwing down a dagger dunk in the finale.
Well, since you said that, he was 17 of 31 in the series for 51 points when Bradley Beal was his primary defender.
Bradley Beal, the guy, was mocked by you last summer repeatedly for saying maybe the Suns shouldn't trade for this guy. Maybe.
In this game, Karl Towns, whose playoff history is scattered. Is that a kind way of saying it?
Yes.
28 points, 10 rebounds. In a
massive efforts at both ends was awesome.
In a road closeout game.
And you know what? His minutes were down in a lot of this series just because they played smaller a lot. They'd go with Gobert and four guard / wings. He was good throughout the series. And when they really needed Cat tonight because Rudy was in foul trouble, he came through with his best performance of the series.
39 points, awesome. 11 of 17 shooting, 4 of 6 from 3. Jaden McDaniels, when the Timberwolves are locked in and making their rotations, like there were multiple times in the fourth quarter of this game where the Suns ran good offense, moved the ball, moved bodies, you know, went through multiple actions, and they could not get open because the Wolves are long and they're dedicated and they work hard and they scramble and they work together and they communicate. And Jaden McDaniels was everywhere defensively. He scores 18 points, hit a huge three-pointer in the fourth quarter when Durant and Booker were trying to throw haymakers and couldn't do it. Absolute kudos to the Timberwolves. Assuming the Nuggets can get another win against the Lakers, this series is potentially a doozy between Minnesota and Denver. Minnesota, one of the few teams in the league that is equipped from a size standpoint to give the Nuggets some problems, and frankly, will be deeper. Okay.
Like, why should we be deeper?
Also, get well soon, Chris Finch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's brutal. Torn patellar tendon.
Is that what it is for sure?
Yeah, got a torn patellar tendon. Obviously got run into by Mike Conley late in the game. It's brutal. Obviously, the end of really, at this point, the pinnacle of his career to this point, winning the first round series the way they did, beating Phoenix, going into the series with Denver where they got a live shot. And obviously, it's hard to know what the overall prognosis is for what he'll be able to do with that, because obviously, if your leg is in that kind of situation, who knows if you could be on the sidelines or whatever. But obviously, that was a crazy thing, and especially where they were at in the series. So hopefully, he's back on his feet soon.
It's crazy. He's having he got named third place for Coach of the Year. Congratulations, Mark Daigneault from the Thunder, winning Coach of the Year. He gets named third. He's coached all over the world over the last, 30 years. It's a pinnacle moment for him winning this playoff series. Obviously, they want to accomplish a lot more. He's, a minute and a half from doing it, and friendly fire. You know, two things came to my mind when I saw it. One, Charlie Weiss. Do you remember Charlie Weiss when he was coaching Notre Dame? And it was like a special teams play, and he was like looking downfield, and a guy got blocked into him and just destroyed his knee. Guy rolled on his knee. The other one was that college coach maybe 7 or 8 years ago, the coach from Georgia State. I think his name is Ron Hunter. And his son, RJ, who was a first-round draft pick, hit a shot in the conference
tournament.
I think it was in the tournament. I think it was a conference championship.
Either way, he had a torn Achilles.
Yeah, he suffered a torn Achilles celebrating. I feel so bad. And you could tell he was in enormous pain, as you can imagine when you have that type of injury. So, yes. Yeah, so.
Well, and from a historical standpoint, trivia question, how many times has a Minnesota sports team swept a series?
Well, I know it's the first in the Timberwolves history.
I mean, it's only the second time the Timberwolves have won a
The answer is zero.
So,
Minnesota sports team in any sport had ever swept the best of
Minnesota
seven
Wild.
Today.
So, no, what about
the
Wolves, the
Twins, the Wild, the North Stars, or even the Minneapolis Lakers with George Mikan? Never swept a best of seven series.
I always thought Mikan was overrated.
The other one is how many series have the Timberwolves ever won?
Oh, that's an easy one. Now it's three.
That's right. And the only other two came 20 years ago this year, the only other year they ever won a playoff series.
Yeah.
So, what an amazing stat that is. And I love how he just slandered the memory of George Mikan. And move over, Bob Pettit.
That was a joke. This Finch thing is, it's unfortunate. I mean, I imagine he'll find a way to be on the sideline. You know, if this was one of the Suns running into Vogel, the way things have gone there, I might be a little suspicious, but clearly this was accidental.
Well,
tell you what, Bradley Beal, though, he gave a nice little smack to Vogel's hand as he's trying to high five and get that. I mean, look, let's just address the Vogel thing. Like, really, we're going to blame the coach here. That's what we're doing. Fire Frank Vogel and everything's same fine.
It's the same discussion as the Lakers discussion.
I mean, come on, man. Like,
same thing.
At some point, maybe the billionaire who put together the roster might want to take just this much accountability, just a little smidgen of accountability. Hey, here's a stat for you. The Suns are 0-6 in playoff games since Ishbia flopped on the sideline to draw a technical foul on Joker. That's a good stat.
That is a good stat.
Yes. That's not even a stats and info.
That's a man special, baby.
I don't have to go to Phoenix for the rest of this season, at least. So maybe they'll let me in there next year.
We'll see. Well,
right off the dome.
Before we talk about big picture, Bradley Beal was absolutely brutal in this game. Brutal. What was his final shooting?
Well, he said he ain't never been swept a day in his life. Well, that's no longer the case, and he did not. What's crazy?
Bradley Beal, one sweep, Minnesota, one sweep.
There you go. It was the Venn diagram. and look, KD showed up. Booker showed up. Bradley Beal, no show. And the Beal contract is just going to loom like a dark cloud over that franchise. That's just the simple fact of the matter. If he made half as much money, he'd be a nice third guy. At $50 million a year, he is doomed to that franchise.
Well, in this game, he was 4 of 13 for 9 points, fouled out in 31 minutes, and had 6 turnovers, 5 of them in the fourth quarter.
Typically, for your Supermax players, you want them to have more buckets than either fouls or turnovers. When fouls and turnovers are more than the buckets, you've really got a financial crisis on your hands there.
What I believed about the Suns was that they would be tremendous offensively and would be, I thought, maybe had a chance to be the greatest offensive team ever.
I agreed.
And knew that defensively they would be in big trouble. But I watched a team that was sort of middle of the pack defensively win the title last year. Now, the Nuggets were very good, much better especially in the finals, but they were playing a bad offensive team. But, you can bring out the receipts, Bontemps. I don't remember ever saying they were winning the West. I never thought they were winning the West. I also know that we talked about this when Beal got traded, there was no first round pick in the deal. And one of the reasons that was the case was because getting off of Beal's contract was the return for Washington. Now, they did get pick swaps. I think they got
four of them and second round picks. And they took on this contract that had a no trade clause. And at the time, you said it was insane to say whether they'd be better off with Chris Paul. Guess what? The Suns would have been better off with Chris Paul for multiple reasons.
Well, they've been better off with Chris Paul's contract.
Sure.
You could argue they would have been better off with Chris Paul, the player, given how
their fourth quarter woes did, and I was slow to fully admit this, but they did miss a point guard to run the show and get things structured down in stretch games. For them to be the worst fourth quarter team by a mile and a half shows that. 10th in the league offensively, not bad, but disappointing.
Oh, hugely disappointing.
Well, by the way, honestly, better than you expect. But
they were 13th defensively.
I was going to say, to interject about Vogel really quick, like the fact that Frank Vogel had this team 13th in the league in defense, like he was brought there to turn that into a good defensive team, or to attempt to. The fact that he got them to 13th, that team shouldn't be in the top half of the league in defense. That's a credit to Frank for doing that.
Well, but you know what, though? Everybody wants to blame somebody. The head coach is always the easiest one to blame. So,
well, in this case, he's literally... Are you going to blame Eric Gordon? Like, there's nothing they can do to this roster.
Well, look, here's the bottom line. Matt Ishbia bought the team officially the day of the trade deadline. He instantly traded everything he had on planet Earth to get Kevin Durant on the team. Now, you could say that 6 weeks later...
Well, he traded 80% of what he had, and they traded the other 20% for Beal. Right.
I mean, fine. They traded everything that wasn't nailed down in the trade for Durant. Then 6 weeks later, they can argue the rug got pulled out from under him because of the new CBA. That's fine. They then go into June and immediately open the first door that's there. Say, Bradley Beal's here. Come on down. Doesn't matter you got a no-trade clause. Doesn't matter you've been injured the last couple of years. Doesn't matter. We have no idea. If you're still an all-star level player, we'll give up all of our stuff that we got left to have this be our third guy.
And doesn't matter
any other possible options.
Doesn't matter that the new CBA says if we do this, we can only, you know, nickel and dime and scrounge around
left.
The edges after this.
This is it. This is the final move. So the final move is the very first move you can possibly make is to trade for Bradley Beal. And I kept saying last summer, are we sure that this was a good idea? And the response kept being, well, Bradley Beal, he's a great third guy. He's a great third guy. He's not a great third guy. Right. He was hurt again. He is not a lead ball handler, as we've seen. And now look what he did in the playoffs. And now his team is stuck with this guy and no trade clause, the $150 million left on his deal. And they can't do anything with him. And the only thing they could do to change their roster is to trade Devin Booker or trade Kevin Durant. So,
well, and there that, you go. The second one is a very interesting possibility because
let me add something to that before you say this.
Okay.
What if I told you that starting July 8th, Kevin Durant is eligible for a contract extension? He has 2 years and $105 million left on his contract. He will turn 36 at the start of training camp next year. But in July, he is eligible to sign a one-year extension to add 1 year on at age 38 for $60 million. What are you going to do about that?
I'm not extending him, and I'm trading him because the only chance I think they have to have Devin Booker be there long-term is to trade Kevin Durant because they have no other paths to make the team better. And if they just try to continue down the path they're on right now, they have no tools to add to the roster. They're going to be back signing minimum players again next year. They're not going to have a good enough team, and you're just going to get closer and closer to the point where Devin Booker's like, nah, I don't really want to be here. Because the only way they really have a chance to retool anything because of all these other moves they made is to do something with the Durant. Like, if they hadn't done this Bradley Beal trade and they had Chris Paul sitting there and they had these pick swaps and they had a couple picks coming up this year that they could trade, you could say, all right, you've got a giant Chris Paul expiring. You've got some pick swaps. You got a couple of actual picks. Maybe you can manufacture that into a couple of players or a younger star to play with these guys going forward. That's all out the window. Like, you can't move Bradley Beal, even if you wanted to, because he didn't give up the no-trade clause in the deal. So you just got him stuck there with a no-trade clause. Nobody wants Yusuf Nurkic. They have no other money to trade. Literally, the only thing they could do is either run it back, either entirely the same, with a new coach, like that's going to fix it, or you have to think about trading one of those guys. I mean, it's just an absolutely ridiculous situation they put themselves in.
And the simple fact is they're locked into this roster. And you tell me how they're going to be a real threat in a Western Conference that the 22-year-old guy who just ripped your heart out and danced on it and for the whole world to see is only getting better. You look around, this 25-year-old who we'll get to Luka, but he's not had a great series this year. He's going to be a dude for quite some time. He's not going anywhere. the 25-year-old MVP candidate and all the other 25-year-old, like the all 25 and under team in Oklahoma City, that's the number one seed, they're not going anywhere.
Oh, and by the way, then there's also still the Denver Nuggets, the defending champs, who are not going anywhere either.
Right.
There's already four teams.
How's the future of the San Antonio Spurs?
And look, the Grizzlies likely are.
How about the Houston Rockets?
Forget those teams. We already at the beginning, even if you want to just talk about the immediate, right? They're not getting into the top four minimum.
Right.
So you're talking like your ceiling is to lose in the first round again. So, and that's with Kevin Durant being as healthy as he's been in years.
I'm going to crystallize this point with this right here. How scary is this? In this game, on their home court, Booker and Durant combined for 82 points.
Not enough.
Durant was 12 of 17. Booker was 13 of 21. They had 11 assists between them, and they lost.
And you know what? The only times they beat the Nuggets last year, they had to go for 80-plus points out of those two guys. Basically, unless those guys go for 80-plus points, they're getting smoked in playoff games.
And it's not even good enough.
And tonight it wasn't even enough. It wasn't even enough. You're talking about a ridiculously expensive franchise that has no real chance to be relevant. And you know what? You can say, oh, well, continuity, it'll be better. Oh, but you're running the coach out of town after 1 year, so don't talk to me about continuity.
Well, and again, even if you want to say continuity, Kevin Durant's probably going to be worse next year, even if he's just a little bit worse. We've already seen this year. This team was supposed to be Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, two top 5 to 10 players, and then you put enough around them that it's not going to matter. Well, by the way, Anthony Edwards, the last 2 weeks, just zoomed right by Devin Booker. Zoomed right by him.
No, Ant is...
Well, I mean, Booker had 49 tonight.
Listen,
I
you could care. Brian.
Do I think Ant is a better, you know, would I rather have Ant going forward? Yes, listen, I would. But like,
don't before this series, Brian, before this series.
Today, tomorrow, and every day for the rest of Booker.
Before the series, anybody in their right mind would take Ant too. But don't make it sound like Booker played like a dog.
That's not
Anthony Edwards is the best two-way guard in the NBA right now.
Listen. Before this series started, Devin Booker would have been ahead of Anthony Edwards on most lists. And I think after this series...
I disagree with that.
He's not going to be ahead of him on all NBA voting.
I bet he will be. I had Devin Booker second team and Ant third team. I bet Ant's going to be third team.
I will match your St. Bon... We will bet the sum that you paid to the St. Bonaventure NIL fund.
Okay. I bet... Well, all right. So that's
if... $4.27.
All right. That's fine. We'll make Adrian happy. So we'll see. But I've been Ants on third team. But look, the point is, you could say there was a debate before this series. You look at what Anthony Edwards did in this series. To me, there's no longer a debate. Like, Devin Booker's reputation has taken a big hit over the past week.
He had 49 tonight, buddy.
Right. They were already down 3-0 in the series.
It's not the night to break Devin Booker.
Two elimination games were much more, they were awful. This one, he at least showed up for the elimination game.
I'm glad he showed up today after they got routed the last three games. Like, come on, what are we doing?
I know. The elimination game is in game four of the
first. Don't rip a guy the night he scores 49.
Okay, I'm talking about the preponderance of evidence over the course of the series, and Anthony Edwards has ascended past him.
Well, we're not ready to have a conversation of potential trade destinations for KD, are we? We probably need to wait for some summer filler time.
First off, they got to make a decision on Vogel in the next few days. Maybe the decision is already
to make
been
that
made.
Decision.
Well, this is what I always say. Okay, you want to fire the coach. Got it. Who are you hiring?
Well, the LA Clippers have a pretty good coach. Do you think you can outbid Steve Ballmer for him? I'm skeptical of that.
You know, I talk to these people in the league who talk about what if Ty Lue becomes available. He ain't going to be available. Number one, the Clippers are going to want to keep him. Number two, in the event he says, I don't want to coach this team anymore, whatever, you know, not that – I'm not saying I would know that. Just like something happens, and he says, I don't want to coach his team anymore. He's under contract for next year. They're not just going to let him go coach a team in their division.
Well, hey, maybe the Suns can split a few more swaps. At a certain point, it's like they're splitting these swaps so thinly, it's going to get to splitting an atom, and we're going to have like a nuclear explosion.
Yeah, I could just nuke the whole team and start over. Expansion team. Burn to the ground and start over.
I think the fairest thing that you could say about the Suns is that even if this worked, I'm not sure that they would have been good enough. Like, even if they achieved the highest level that they did, I don't think they're beating Minnesota. I don't think they're beating Denver.
Yep.
Well, and you know what the irony is? If you look at the teams that are ahead of them, specifically the team that beat them, Oklahoma City and Denver. Now, yes, Minnesota traded for Rudy, but generally, those teams have been built through the draft and through building around the edges and accumulating players over time. Certainly been the case in Oklahoma City, certainly been the case in Denver. And for the most part, with the Wolves, they've got Jay McDaniels, they've got Towns, they've got Ant. They've obviously made some smart additions around the edges. Yes, they made the big trade, but those were teams that organically grew over time. The Suns were on a path to doing that and got to the finals doing that. And then in a 4-month period, completely went in another direction. And now they've driven into the ditch.
Well, in Oklahoma City, the foundation of that was built benefiting from another team building a super team.
That's right.
You get the SGA trade. Jalen Williams ends up being part of that. And by the way, I think 29 other teams would have done the same deal the Clippers did, because it wasn't just trading for Paul George. It was
for sure.
Or Kawhi Leonard, essentially.
For sure.
And also, by the way, Paul George had an incredible performance today.
We got to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we'll get to that. Point is, though, they not only did they build through the draft, but they built by getting a nice player, a very promising guy coming off his rookie deal. SGA has blown by everybody's expectations. Everybody's. People thought he could be an all-star, not an MVP candidate. He's an MVP candidate. And then they just accumulated the biggest stockpile of draft picks we've ever seen. And they haven't been perfect with those. They've had misses. But yeah. when you get a Jalen Williams with a late lottery pick that, by the way, you had to be very fortunate to even have that be a late lottery pick. You know, when you hit on Chet Holmgren at number two, and then you develop.
Which was a gamble that almost, short term kind of blew up in their face.
Yeah.
They gambled on him and then he missed his whole first year.
Yeah. And he's a perfect fit now. And then.
They gambled on him?
Yeah.
Some people, are you kidding me? There were people who had no interest in taking him in the top three.
There were mixed reviews. And certainly there was a lot of people who said he can't play center in the NBA. Well, he played 82 games of center in the NBA this year at a potential all defense, at an all defense level, whether he makes a team or not.
I had him second team.
Opening up the entire floor for them offensively with his shooting and kind of secondary. Playmaking ability. And then Lou Dort, talk about a developmental story, a bricklayer who just happened to be a freaking awesome linebacker, basically, although I guess, whatever. Do they even have linebackers in the CFL? He's Canadian. Point being, an awesome defender who's like, can he ever be a mediocre offensive player? Guy's shooting 40-some-odd percent now from three.
Yeah.
He's an elite 3-and-D player.
Here's one thing I don't understand about the Suns, and then we'll move on. The team that they made the finals with in 2021, they basically built that team through the draft. Now,
that's what I was saying, just like all these other teams.
Right. They did get Chris Paul, which was a huge move, which definitely propelled them forward. And that was by trade. But Booker, draft. Ayton, draft. You can say Ayton underachieved. That's fine. They were in the finals.
He was good in that run. Bridges and Cam Johnson.
Like, they drafted all those guys.
Yeah.
And so to abandon the draft, how you built your finals team is just, I understand that if you get to a certain level, you may need to cash in stuff to get the last piece. But talk about a cautionary tale. And I mean,
just inheriting a good team and not making much of a change. It's hard to become famous doing that. You got to make a big splash.
Well, I never thought they would win the West, but I never thought they would a sweep in the first round.
Now, I will also say this. They had their hearts ripped out by a then 23-year-old a couple years ago. And what Luka and the Mavericks did coming back from 0-2, not just winning game 7 in Phoenix, but absolutely humiliating them. Luka outscoring an entire team in the first half of a game seven on their floor. That was a crushing blow. And we all know DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker were not going to be.
No, I get it. I get it. But
in that moment, McMahon, even though Ishbia wasn't owning the team, it's why they ended up making that trade. Just like back in 2013, the Nets lost game seven at home to Joakim Noah on one leg. Mm-hmm. And a month later, they traded everything they ever had to get Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And that's why we talk.
Humiliation can lead to major change, massive risk.
That's why we talk about the playoffs so much, because obviously the end goal is obviously what everybody's focused on, but it's also the moments like that along the way lead to these other things that happen. It's not just like, oh, well, you forget about it and move on.
You know, and I'll also say this. I know, who was it with the no? Oh, it was Bruce Brown that said, hey, the Wolves were our toughest playoff competition last year. And I get that. The Suns are the only team that won two games in a series last year against the Nuggets.
It was 2-2.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough. And so they went out and got Bradley Beal. That's boiled down, but that's essentially what they did.
I think that it should be a flop, though, man. You just the basketball gods, a scrappy former walk-on should know
not. They actually did win more games this year than they did last year. It doesn't feel not like
more
it.
More playoff games.
No, they sure as heck didn't.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, let's move on because we had some other stuff.
Detroit Pistons.
We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We spent a lot of time on that.
All right, let's go. It feels like a day and a half ago, but it was 12 hours ago. Let's go to Philly where you were, Bontemps. This is an iconic performance from Jalen Brunson.
Hold on, where Bontemps and a lot of other New Yorkers were.
Well, first off, can I just say something? It's not like if you sell, I'm not defending Philly fans, but it's not like when you sell your tickets on StubHub or whatever, that it says that you're selling it to a Knicks fan.
Well, look, here's the deal with this, okay? Here's just the straight deal with it. To go to the Garden costs nearly $1,000 to get in the building. If you go to Philly, I have a friend who's a Knicks fan who came to the game today. He sat in the lower bowl and paid probably a quarter or a third of what it would have cost.
How much will it cost to go to Indiana?
Well, I'll say that. The only reason I'm calling bull on that is because I highly doubt you have a friend.
Well, I'm just telling you, it was a good setup. I'm just telling you, your people are saving, even in counting, driving down there, paying for everything. People are saving hundreds and hundreds of dollars to go see the Knicks play. And by the way, this is the first time the Knicks have had a team that people are this excited about in 25 years.
I would say for game six, they ought to have like a caravan or like a bunch of buses. But
what games? What about game six?
I don't know if that's happening, buddy.
Also, and I know that the Embiid quote, which he seemed to get more as the quote went on.
I was standing there for it. He just was me. I mean, he wasn't wound up about it.
I don't care about that Embiid quote. And I know that should not be the takeaway from this game that Embiid was not happy. The takeaway from this game is that down the stretch, Embiid was not able to make a difference on the game. Now, I'm not.
No, the takeaway from this game is Jalen Brunson just had arguably the best performance in New York Knicks playoff history.
I would not say arguably. I would say the best.
Jalen freaking Brunson, the guy who people thought was overpaid at 104 mil over 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a video going around the internet where everybody who criticized the signing is not everybody, but many people who criticized the signing, mm-hmm. which has a soundbite in there from me.
Oh, doesn't have one for me. I was on the right side of that one, baby.
But I will just say that, like, of the people that didn't think he was a $100 million player was the team that had just had him for 4 years, which we don't need to go over old ground.
Well, listen, it could be a very apocryphal thing for Dallas. We'll see how it happens there.
But anyway,
I don't know what that means, but I think I agree.
Well, the thing about it is, like,
means it's going to be a big topic in your book, Big Man. That's what it means.
Oh, yes. That's it. Yes. I definitely agree with that. The book will not have those kind of words in there.
What will the reading level assignment be when that's done? What is happening in this series is the exact indictment of what people like me were saying about Brunson when he got $100 million. I was skeptical that a player of that size could deliver under this type of situation. And the Sixers have used a classic game plan against him, which was to put size on him. And it was working through two games. The game two loss for the Sixers, as Brunson only shot 25% in those first two games, as he struggled dealing with the size, that is going to be, and I know they'll point to the last 2 minute report or whatever, but not just like Milwaukee, when they cash out, which may be near, letting game three slip through their fingers when they had it, crushing Philly, coming home down 0-2 and letting Brunson get traction. Not only has Brunson figured out how to score against the size, Philly was so desperate, trying like crazy to stop Jalen Brunson from scoring and getting past people. They put Tobias Harris on him. They're like, okay, well, the 6'7 and 6'8 guys, here's a 6'10 guy.
Well, I mean, Tobias isn't 6'10. You're getting way off track here, I think.
6'8, 6'9. Anyways. Look,
again, today, like Jalen Brunson, this game reminded me of a game you and I were at, Brian. It was also a game four. It was also on the road. Also, the road team was up 2-1.
6'8. I stand corrected.
Can you guess what game I'm talking about?
Say it again. It's game four.
Game four on the road. Home road team up 2-1 in the series. Goes up 3-1 with a win. Do you remember the game?
I've seen that many times. I'm going to need more.
2014, second round, Brooklyn, Barclays Center, Heat Nets.
I think LeBron scored James 50 or 49.
49 and assisted on a three-pointer in the corner by Chris Bosh to win the game in Brooklyn and end that series. This game reminded me of that. Because look, again, like I talked about on Friday, the Sixers' defense on Jalen Brunson is working more or less. Jalen Brunson took 34. Well, listen, he had an unbelievable game. It's not saying he didn't play incredibly. He took 34 shots. He also took a bunch of free throws. He's using the ball a ton of the time. They only scored 97 points. In today's NBA, you would think that would be enough to win the game. The reason the Sixers lost the game is for the same reason they lost game one, which is the Knicks are the epitome of their coach and the epitome of their star player. And they are utterly relentless at all times. And over the final 5 minutes of the game, after Nick Nurse chose to leave Joel Embiid in to start the fourth quarter because the Sixers are minus 38 in 31 minutes with Joel Embiid on the bench in the series, and were minus 6 in 4 minutes in the first half, and he got yanked back in the game, Nick said, I'm going to ride with him down the stretch and see how it goes. The Sixers absolutely ran out of gas. They missed their final 11 shots, and the New York Knicks got 7 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter and had 11 second chance points, 11-2 second chance point advantage. That's why the Knicks won the game, because Jalen Brunson hit a few shots down the stretch and was incredible. And he was absolutely incredible the whole game, but the Knicks are just utterly relentless and never get tired and never stop working. It's why they won that game too, because they just dug that game out of nowhere. And the Sixers' effort was fine. They played hard, but it wasn't exceptional. And to beat the Knicks, you have to match their effort level. And the Sixers didn't. And that's why they lost.
Yeah. The Knicks only shot 6 of 21 in the fourth quarter. It wasn't like they rode out of this.
Yeah, they weren't making anything. The Sixers were playing really good defense.
What's that?
Did Brunson hit all six of them? What was Brunson?
No, he was only 3 of 8. But you talked about the rebounding. This is a number that is unrecoverable in any kind of high-level playoff game, high-stakes playoff game. Fourth quarter rebounding. Knicks 18. Philly 8.
Yeah. Listen, the Knicks had 15 getting offensive rebounds.
Rebounded by 10 boards? Holy Moses.
The Knicks had 15 offensive rebounds in the game. 7 of them were in the fourth quarter.
And by the way, that's with Mitchell Robinson out. That's with
and Hartenstein was in out. Foul trouble. Hartenstein played 2 seconds in the fourth quarter.
I mean, yes. Josh Hart couldn't hit a shot, literally, over 7. 17 rebounds for Josh Hart. Ananobi, 14 rebounds. I mean, dude. But like Jalen Brunson, for this guy, he is a perennial most improved player candidate to the point now he's an all-NBA lock and potentially.
I voted him as my pick for it this year.
I mean, and dude, this guy, two-time national champion, NCAA player of the year, coming out of Villanova, he's not athletic. He's short. There's not much upside. He has gotten better and better and better and better and better to the point where he is the face of the franchise of by far the biggest threat to the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. And like, you could not get more of an ultimate Tibbs guy to the point where Tibbs probably rocked this kid as a baby, quite literally.
It's incredible.
Is it too old school of a coach to say that the fact that Josh Hart played 46 minutes, Ananobi played 47 minutes, Jalen Brunson played 44 minutes?
That's only because he had to go to the locker room for a few minutes.
Right, that's right. He banged knees,
right? He banged his knee briefly and missed for about 90 seconds at the start of the fourth quarter, walked out of the locker room, immediately walked back on the court and started playing. Okay. And the first bucket he had is this ridiculous runner across the lane where Joel Embiid had his entire arm up 9.5 feet in the air, and Jalen just right over the top, right through the net.
A lefty going right, shooting back across his body over one of the best defensive bigs in the league.
He may not have great size or great physique, but his body control is top 1%.
He is also a bull. He is strong as hell.
Yes.
His footwork is phenomenal.
We're going to talk about Paul George's footwork is incredible.
But you're talking about how the Sixers ran out of gas, which I think is true. And, you know, basically they went with Ananobi guarding Embiid down the stretch because they knew he was basically playing like a guard. So they put a 6'8 guy on him. And I believe
the Sixers were playing hard. The Knicks outran them.
I know. So what I'm saying is that two old school coach, old school, you know, concept to say that the Knicks players are used to playing mid to high 40s and the Sixers players are not.
No, I don't think that's the case. Cause I think that's diminishing what the Knicks are doing, because this Knicks team is the easiest team to root for. I've maybe ever been around. All these guys are friendly to each other. They're giving each other a hard time all the time. We're at Temple the other day for shoot around. Jalen Brunson's walking in, mocking Temple for
they shot around at Temple and not Villanova.
Well, Villanova's not in the city, as they were all making jokes about. You don't really know Philly very well. Villanova's way out in the suburbs.
Teams have shot around at Temple for decades.
Yes, but he came in and made jokes about Temple's never been to the Final Four. We've got a couple titles because Dante and Josh Hart were in there. It's like
Big
being
Five
around
never dies.
Yes, it's like being around a college team, and the way they play and play together throughout these games, it's incredibly impressive to watch. And yeah, like you said, McMahon, Josh Hart couldn't hit the broadside of a barn today, but he's flying around, grabbing offensive rebounds, getting steals, making plays. Dante DiVincenzo couldn't do a thing all day, comes in and hits back-to-back threes in the third quarter, totally changes the game. Deuce McBride, who nobody had ever heard of when they traded Emmanuel quickly, they signed him to an extension. He's now playing 30 minutes a game in playoff games, having huge games. Every time he shoots the ball, I think it's going in. And all these guys playing insanely hard, and they're all led by their point guard, who, when he gets asked about anything he does, his stock line is what he said today, which is, I'll look back on it when I retire. It's all, we're moving on to the next thing. We're thinking about the next thing. He got asked about passing Bernard King's Knicks franchise scoring record in the playoffs. He said, unless he's going to show up and play in the next game, I can promise you, I'm not going to think about it until later.
Probably will show up for the next game. He just won't play.
Yes. I'm sure he'll be at the Garden along with Carmelo, along with every other luminary that could possibly be there. I mean, this team is the most prototypical New York team that has existed in decades.
And they fit with the way their coach wants to play.
And there's never been it. That's the one thing too. The Knicks have done an unbelievable job of getting players that fit the way the coach wants to play. Like, it's an obvious thing to say. You've got to find players that match the style of your team. They have just slowly accrued over time a bunch of guys who are just going to go fight for every inch they can on the court all the time. And the coach is going to be over there stomping his feet on the sideline and fighting along with them.
Yeah, they went out and got his Tibbs' favorite player in the league, who he's known since he was a baby, and all that guy's college teammates.
Also,
who won championships at Villanova.
They played eight guys today, and Bojan Bogdanović was injured, and he's dealing with some stuff. He only played a minute, but they played eight guys today. Three of them they acquired during the season.
Yeah.
All right, that's number one.
Yeah, and really they played seven because Bojan basically didn't play.
Right, but he's one of the guys that they acquired during the season.
Right.
Three of these guys they acquired during the season. Like, that's not
normal. Did they acquire all of them over the last 2 years?
Well, DiVincenzo was the other guy. He's in his first year with them.
Everybody that played today has been acquired in the last 2 years. Yeah. Well, I guess Deuce McBride was technically on the team 2 years ago, but he didn't play until January.
Right. Like, they're not going to win. Leon Rose won't win Executive of the Year because the Kristaps Porzingis trade and Drew Holiday trade were so excellent, and the 64 wins. I assume Brad Stevens is going to win it. The media doesn't vote on that. The executives do. But the mid-season trades that Leon Rose and his staff have executed, starting with the Josh Hart trade, that's amazing.
And they still have a bundle of picks that they can use if a blockbuster is available.
But you know what? They got to be real careful who they bring in to not, I mean,
they do. This is another example of you've got to pick the right guy because this team is a special group.
Yeah. It doesn't mean they go after whatever star becomes available, but if the right star becomes available, they can make a bid.
And you saw him in Dallas, McMahon. It's just, It's unbelievable the way this guy, Jalen Brunson, has developed as a player. Like, it is it's unparalleled. Like, listen,
I was high on Brunson. I was high on Brunson. And I told you guys, I said he's going to be a good starting point guard. And I would always point out his last year here, Luka missed like 20 something games, around 20 games, including the playoffs. And Brunson averaged 20 points and 7 assists, and including 41 and 31 in back-to-back playoff wins. I said he's going to be a good, like a top 10 starting point guard. I didn't think he was going to be a top 10 overall player in the NBA. He is blown by everybody's expectations. His dad didn't think he was going to be this good.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I gave his dad a little bit of a hard time about that the other day. His dad came up to me today in the locker room, and he poked me in the chest. He said, I better hear you talking tomorrow. And I said, don't worry, Rick. You're going to be hearing tomorrow.
One thing, if you're around the Knicks, you always hear Rick Brunson talking.
It's also
the best
true.
Thing, the most true thing Rick Brunson ever told me, there's two things. It was actually in the same interview, Salt Lake City, right after the 41 and 31 games for Brunson. The first thing he said in that interview was, Jalen's born a to interview. Said, you didn't learn that from me. Jay Wright programmed him. The other thing that he said that certainly came to be true is, ain't no discount. Don't tell me you love me, show me. And basically saying the Mavs better throw a Brinks truck at him. And obviously that didn't happen. And there were family ties, and off he is in New York. And I would say everybody in that metropolitan area is very glad he's there.
Now he's in national television commercials, and he's going to be getting MVP votes and first team All-NBA votes.
Oh, yeah, he was on my first team All-NBA. And
there are shades indoors today.
I don't know. I didn't see him. I didn't see him with them on, but I could. I might. I didn't see him in the interview room. I just saw him in the locker room.
I saw him wearing shades indoors the other day, and that you can't. That's not a Tibbs guy. He's gone a little bit. What is it? What's the fancy streets in Fifth Avenue? Is that a fancy street?
Yeah, that's a fancy street. There you go. The only other thing I want to say real quick on this series is all four of these games have been absolutely unbelievable games. Yeah. The atmospheres in the arenas have been incredible. They've all been really competitive games, and the Sixers are down 3-1. They could have swept. Like, they really could have won each of these games. And the Knicks...
Are you saying it's the most competitive 3-1 series in NBA
history? No. What I'm saying is...
Hey, I'll say this. The Suns, that was not the most competitive sweep in NBA history.
No, it was not. But the Knicks...
You know, the Knicks have, going to Phoenix.
The Knicks have found a way to dig these games out. And it's a credit to the way the Knicks go about their business. And I think Philly can get back in the series, but it's going to take a lot. And Tuesday night at the Garden is going to be an absolute madhouse.
Joel Embiid is playing through so much, and he's playing against a team that is got so much going for it. I know this is extraordinarily disappointing situation for Philly, and I know that they've got to fix some stuff on their roster, and I know that there's some certain guys who are underachieving.
Well, yeah, Tobias Harris has been a disaster.
Well, I saw a guy today score 33 points, and I'm not talking about the one who just left Philly, but there's another guy who I think the 76ers might have interest in. Now, it's too early to speculate about free agency because Daryl Morey would never tamper. But Paul George has not signed that extension that's been on the table.
He hasn't, Tim.
Has he?
Hmm. He has not.
We'll discuss that in a
Why
second.
Why would he do that?
I just want to say that, you know, sometimes in the playoffs, situations dictate that you just – you know, you don't have your best hand. And that's what's happening to the Sixers. By the way, Joel needs to stop hitting guys in like the head and face.
He took a cheap shot at Brunson today.
He is fortunate that they didn't upgrade any of those other fouls from game three to flagrants, unless they did, and I don't know about it.
Well, I think
they did not. I checked on that.
Has privately, secretly made a rule. Superstars cannot be ejected.
Adam Silver was at the game today. Saw Adam walk by, said hello. So he's walking out.
I was at a playoff game today, and a superstar, an MVP candidate, got a technical foul in the first half. And let me tell you, fellas, there were opportunities to tee him up for a second time. And Tony Brothers is not necessarily known as a patient man, but
that's true.
But he didn't hit him with one. Now, there was one point where Tony Brothers.
He also had five fouls for the last 5 minutes of the game.
Tony Brothers, 5 minutes, 55 seconds, actually. Tony Brothers once looked at Luka and said, "Don't you start with me." And Luka kind of gave him a stare back, but walked
Don't
away.
You start. He started 6 years ago and hasn't stopped.
He never ends. He never ends.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. All right, let's talk about that one. Kawhi ruled out before the game. And I will say it's interesting that whenever they have Kawhi stuff, they bring out Lawrence Frank to discuss it. I think Ty Lue is tired, long tired of dealing with this stuff. Lawrence Frank comes out, second time he's come out and just in this first round, and he says what, McMahon?
Essentially, Kawhi is out today and we don't know when he's coming back. I mean, that's the...
I believe it. I don't, you know, sometimes I think teams are obfuscating. I believe they don't know.
No, they don't. And look, I don't think you should bet your mortgage payment that'll be back during this series. I think that's probably unlikely. And
well, he did not look good on Friday night.
No, and Kawhi was, you know, the guys who cover the Clippers on a regular basis, that's the most Kawhi's ever elaborated about an injury. And he said, it just didn't respond right. After the first game, I came back. Didn't respond right after game two. Where there were flashes in game two, is the Clippers lost, but there were flashes, and it's like, okay, third quarter, it's like, that looks like Kawhi. there weren't those flashes in game three. I mean, honestly, Kawhi being out there did not help the Clippers whatsoever. In game three, he was stiff. They were, you know, he was on this weird minutes restriction. He was not in any kind of flow, no kind of pop, no kind of lift. So he's out today. And for the two games that he's missed, the Mavericks, they've been 2:30 tips, and the Mavericks haven't showed up till about like 3:15. Well, they're 3:30. You know, those 2:30 tips are a little bit late. Anyways, like they've just dug themselves these massively deep holes. They were down 31 points today with 5:43 left in the second quarter. Kyrie at that point in the game was scoreless. He scored on the very next play, ended the game with 40 points, including one of the most ridiculous in-traffic layups you have ever seen in your life, where if you pause it at the right point of the video, you can't see him. He is that surrounded by Clippers. And suddenly, whoop, here pops out Kawhi and Bop, or Kyrie. There's the ball.
I think there's a chance that Kyrie is in the best shape he's been in his NBA career.
Yeah. He had the most dunks in his career this year. But anyways, this circus layup with 2:15 remaining gives the Mavericks the lead. And then they just couldn't close the door. And Luka is not right. Luka was questionable for this game. Not that there was really any doubt that he was playing. But, you know, he's going to warm up and we'll see.
He said after the game, did he say my knee is injured? Or he said it's hurt. How did he
said I'm obviously hurting.
Yeah.
They're describing it. They're listening to his right knee soreness. He says it's been stiff. Now, this was a tough one. He hurt it in the first quarter of game three. And that's a night game. This is an afternoon game. So I'm not good at math. Call it a 40-hour turnaround, whatever it was. Not two full days. Get an extra day going before game five. He's really looking forward to having the two full off days and then a nighttime tip for game five. But Luka owned it. He said, I feel like I'm letting Kyrie down. Even before Luka got hurt, Luka has not had a good offensive game in this series. And he goes, what do you mean? He's averaging 29 points per game. He's shooting 38.6% for overall, 26.5% on three. And right now, and by the way, we'll also talk about his defense. He's been very good in the first three games, abysmal today. He couldn't move laterally and just wasn't.
And the Clippers knew that.
And he's not getting his normal separation or lift on his step back. He was 1 of 8 on threes a day. The one that he hit actually tied the game in the fourth quarter, and he threw his arms up kind of like, oh my gosh, you know, praise the basketball gods. But we'll see how he's feeling for game five. He owned this one and admitted, I've got to be much better, and said, I mean, he says, look, I'm hurting, but it's not an excuse. I've got to be better. But you talk about hunting him. Old Stats Williams filled me up with a bunch of stats today. One of them was this: 15 drives defended by Luka, 12 were blow bys. 80% of them were blow bys, which is the most of anybody who's defended 15 drives.
Good job working out that percentage. 12 decade. Or 15. Good job.
Yeah. Well, Stats did it for me.
I was going to say, my man Stats definitely came through with that one.
Now, a couple things here. Number one, I told you, he was not moving well at all. He was not, and they're hunting him regardless because they're trying to make him work, but especially today. Number two, though, Harden, just like he did game one, lit them on fire in the first quarter from three-point range. And so the Mavericks basically said, hey, we cannot give up threes. And Paul George did the same thing. Harden and Paul George were 10 of 13 from three in the first half. The Clippers as a team were 14 of 21 from three-point range.
They were like 18 of 29 for the game.
Right. But again, 14 of 21 in the first half. So that tells you, you know, it ends up being 4 of 8 in the second half. But so the priority was run them off the three-point line. We can live with twos, contested twos. We can't live with threes. Well, they ran him off the three-point line. And then it was the fourth quarter. PG did hit a ridiculously tough corner three over Derrick Jones right after that crazy circus layup by Kyrie. That's how quick that lead was at the Mavericks, and then it was gone.
Yeah, that the footwork from PG on that shot was unbelievable. Like, I was talking to somebody in the league about it today after the game. Like, unless you stood on, like, we've all been on the court, like, there's so little space there.
Yeah.
And for him to get himself in the right space to get that shot off and then clean to get it off, like, that was just an unbelievable play and a huge shot too in the moment, because they had just given up the lead. It looked like the thing was going away, and that was just a massive swing back in the other direction.
Right. And if you blow a 31-point lead, which has only happened once in the last 25 years, ironically, the Clippers coming back to beat the Warriors in 2019, you blow that, like, forget it. This series is donezo. But then it was James Harden floater clinic the rest of the game.
Yep.
Went 5 of 6 on floaters in crunch time. And that was the Mavericks game plan. Force him into floaters. We can live with that.
Well, I think stats and information said that he was shooting under 30% on floaters this season.
I was going to say, statistically, the game plan made sense. 28.1% on floaters this season. 11 of 39. 11 all season. 5 in crunch time.
Crazy.
Today,
crazy.
You know? And so Mavericks,
by the way, this is the most points he'd scored in a quarter in the paint in his career.
Yeah. And they had 20 points in the paint as a team.
In the fourth. Yeah.
And Mavericks fans are fired up. They're mad at J. Kidd again. And, you know, J. Kidd's popularity tends to be almost as brief as that Mavericks lead today.
I will say this, you know, a year ago when Kawhi went down, and he's gone down the playoffs a number of times, the Clippers were cooked. And they were up 1-0 in that series. Kawhi gets hurt. They lose 4 in a row. It was they needed a point guard, but it was imperative to them to get help. And they searched high and low. They thought they had a deal for Brogdon, and then it fell apart on draft day. Then they were in the bidding for Drew Holiday. They were on the bidding for other guys I can't remember even now. And they finally get Harden. And is Harden the perfect guy to have on your team in the playoffs with his playoff history? No, but it wasn't like they were able to go to the star store and have 11 different choices. It took them months and a bunch of different attempts. And even the Harden thing, they kept button into a brick wall before they finally got that deal done. And this is, in theory, what they got him for, which is so that in the event, obviously their vision was that all three of them play together, but in the event that they lose,
sounds Kawhi, familiar.
You're not kidding. They have this other option. And James Harden has been terrific in this series. He is shooting.
He's been terrific in game one and game four. And that's a massive reason the series is tied.
Yeah. It's also just like last year against Boston when he had specific really good games, and those were the games that Philly won, and he didn't have good games in the other games, and that was how it went.
He's shooting 54% overall, 50% from three, and 90% from the line. That's pretty good.
And Kyrie is shooting pretty, you know, it's like 51.
Kyrie is playing great.
He's playing great. Luka is not playing up to his level. And
Tim Hardaway is hurt. Gafford is dinged.
Well, and that's the thing I was going to say. The Mavs fans are mad at J. Kidd because the last 10 minutes of that game, they played small. They played Maxi Kleber at the 5. Daniel Gafford sitting on the bench. Derek Lively II sitting on the bench. You know, their tag team rim runner, rim protector tandem is over there waving towels. And I asked J. Kidd about it, and he had a reasonable explanation. And that was, they wanted to play 5 out. They wanted to put 5 shooters on the floor. You know, the Mavericks scored 33 points in the fourth quarter. That was, you know, they felt like spreading the floor out was the way to go. Hey, you can second guess it. I think it is a fair second guess to say, okay, what about when you know, what about late? Don't you want to get rim protection in there late? That's fair. The other thing, and J. Kidd didn't say this, but his trust for Maxi Kleber in closing situations is stronger than it is for rookie Derek Lively II.
Of course.
Or for Daniel Gafford, who has been very good in Dallas, but has only been there a couple months. They've closed out playoff wins. They've closed out playoff series with Maxi Kleber anchoring the defense in the fourth quarter. Now, again, you play to the percentages on Harden's floater. Does it change things if Gafford's in there? If Lively's in there? We'll never know. But they had Harden taking the shots they wanted him to take, and he made them pay.
Well, and the other thing is, too, you have talked a lot about how good Dallas's defense has been, and it's been really good. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I've been concerned about going into the playoffs with Dallas's defense is that they don't really have very many guys who are capable of slowing down guys on the perimeter. Because partly, if you have Luka and Kyrie out there playing together, there's only so many perimeter guys you're going to have out there. There's only so many perimeter defenders you can have out there. And if you look at this game today, like, sort of proof positive of it. I know it's one game and it's cherry picking a little bit, but they're going up against two all-star, you know, star perimeter players. Paul George is 11 for 19, 7 for 10 from 3, does whatever he wants in the game. James Harden goes 12 for 17, 4 for 5 from 3. Two of them together are 23 for 36 from the field. Like, you know, I understand guys aren't going to shoot like that every game, but that this is where they're, how well they've defended is going to be tested as they get into these higher level series in the playoffs. Next round, assuming they get through, going to be sitting there with Shea and Jalen Williams. They get past that, they're looking at Jamal Murray. Like, you know, or Anthony Edwards. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over time.
The crazy thing about Paul George's game today, that three we were talking about, the unbelievable corner three over Derrick Jones Jr., was his second bucket of the second half. He had 26 in the first half. I know. And when he was lighting them up in the first half, one of those threes he hit over PJ Washington. I think there were some courtside fans that were, you know, doing a little bit of a chirping. He turned and gave him a quick little PJ Washington style arms crossed stare, which was a moment in game three. That was an instantly iconic moment in Dallas.
McMahon wrote a good Washington story about that today. Go read it.
Yeah, and I got to say, you wrote about the trades last year, right after the Mavericks made the Kyrie trade. I was in LA for LeBron's game where he passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in scoring. And Nico Harrison came to the game because he had a long history with LeBron as an executive at Nike. And I saw Nico and I just said, the trade was like less than 2 days earlier.
Kyrie made his debut the next night against the Clippers.
I was like, good luck. Because I really didn't know if that was going to work out. Well, we'll see, but that trade is looking spectacular right now. And
it's a hell of a lot better than it did a year ago. But again, you guys made fun of me. I told you they traded for Kyrie last year. Then they fell apart. But people who thought it was cause and effect were not accurate.
Well,
they have surrounded them with better pieces. And hey,
it was very hard to defend anything that the Mavericks did at the end of last season.
100%. But, and again, I was critical of the Gafford and Washington deals.
We were on here.
They have been much better than I thought. They still paid significant prices, and we'll see. But the threat of Luka discontent has been minimized. I will certainly say that.
Now let's see if they can get two more wins, because this is what they did the trade for, was to get wins now.
But it's also, let's just be honest. Like, if Luka looks himself in the mirror and says, man, damn, I had a crappy series, then it's not, I got to go. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
I know, but if they lose to, I'm just saying, if they lose to the Clippers without Kawhi, right? That's not a great referendum immediately on those trades.
Well, they're built for the next 3 years, not just for this.
I'm just saying.
That's what your story was about today.
It was a very good story. You should definitely go read it.
I think your perspective on the way Luka's playing in this series is the most important thing, and how much of a how big these next few days are going to be. And Wednesday night, look, game fives and 2-2 series help shape careers.
Yeah.
So you got a big one for a lot of future Hall of Famers. So stay up late, get the coffee going. All right. Before we go, I do want to talk about this Bucks Pacers game. It wasn't, you know, look, the Bucks, I don't know what we're going to say about the Bucks, because they are devastated with injuries.
Yeah.
This is the second consecutive year.
Lost in the fourth quarter.
First quarter.
First quarter.
I don't know how you evaluate the Bucks, regardless of how they perform in the regular season. If they get knocked out in the first round 2 years in a row where Giannis is hurt.
But they weren't good enough before, though.
I understand.
Last year you could have said, hey, Giannis was hurt. We blew multiple 20-point leads to Miami. This is like an act of God series. Like, crazy things happened. Okay. This team has been under 500 with Doc Rivers. Not super competitive.
Like, I know, but they could also say that they blasted the Celtics twice in the regular season, and if they had gotten to that series, who knows?
Sure. Okay.
Well, that'll be a great banner to hang up there where the media sits.
That's two. That's two out of 80, as opposed to the 82 out of 82.
I know.
Here's all you need to know. They didn't think they were good enough after last season, so they blew things up and made a massive blockbuster deal, trading their second-best player and major draft capital to go all in on this year, and they got worse. That's what's happened.
Well, the thing is, Portis gets ejected in the first quarter. It was a little bit of a soft ejection, but I don't know. He's known to lose his cool. That's well known about
him.
In the
situation the Bucks are in, it's inexcusable to do what Bobby Portis did.
I agree. They actually shot 51%. I know Indy's not great defensively.
We can't say this, though. If that was Joel Embiid, he wouldn't get ejected. If that was Luka Doncic, he wouldn't get ejected.
Well, no.
Clearly.
No.
But Miles Turner was spectacular in this game. Halliburton had his best offensive game. He didn't have his best assist game, but he's had his best offensive game. And, I mean—
Listen, Brian, you want to know why we could say the Bucks situation didn't work, honestly? Like, yes, Dame and Giannis are hurt. Okay. They played Danilo Gallinari 13 minutes today. Danilo Gallinari, who's been done for multiple years now as an NBA player. Like,
they were down three starter level players to get to their point.
Well, look, yeah. We're really close to, over the span of a year, two first round exits and two coaches fired. Like, doesn't seem like things are going great
and
for a team with a generational star as a centerpiece who, every time the wind blows, he's telling you, we better win now, or I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know how much longer I'm going to be here.
And he became the first player in the history of the league to score 30 points a game on 60% shooting this year. He was unbelievable this year, and they still were a fairly mediocre team most of the time.
And look, Wendy, I know you get yourself all in the crosshairs of those beer-drinking Bucks fans because you always say things about, you know, Giannis getting itchy, but as teams that have these stockpile of picks are discussing potential targets, he comes up very, very early, if not right off the bat in those conversations.
Right. Well, look, he signed an extension. He's committed there for now and until it's different.
He signed an extension.
He's committed there until it's different.
There
that's right.
Hey, did Kevin Durant ever sign a contract extension with the
Brooklyn? No, I know. I'm just saying, like,
he signed a contract extension in the fall. Once this season's over, he could be traded at any point. Not saying he's getting traded tomorrow, to be clear, aggregators. Just saying, the idea that, well, he's signed a contract, that's not how things work in the NBA.
You remember when Paul George signed that contract in Oklahoma City?
There was a party on July 1st. I remember it.
Cupcakes?
Yeah. It's a real tough situation for the Bucks.
The injuries just can't excuse away the Bucks season. That's all. Their season was already a disappointment.
But even healthy, they have been. I mean, at 30-13, they were a mess. They fired their coach and have been.
And look, I don't want to take anything away from the Pacers. Siakam played great those first two games in Milwaukee. Now you get Turner. You know, this is, you know, one of the great moments.
You can also say the Pacers also were fairly in a dogfight today to beat this decrepit Bucks team also. Like, yes, they pulled away.
Well,
late,
that's the thing. But the Pacers made 22 of 43 threes.
Yes. Like, you know, this should have been a 25-point win, and it was a two-possession game in the fourth quarter.
I thought the Herd put up a fight today.
And the Pacers did their level best in 100 ways to blow the game the other night in game three, and just eventually the Bucks just gave it back to them at the end.
I mean,
Patrick Beverley made one of the dumbest
plays guys
of the
ever met. Next time I see Rick, I'm going to talk to him about the math of fouling when you're up three with seconds remaining.
Well, those two shots that Middleton hit were pretty remarkable for different.
The first one was a pretty clean shot. The second one
was a great play
shot.
Design. It was a very good play design.
The second one was a
where they had
shot.
Ample opportunity to foul before he got the ball.
It's like when Brook Lopez caught the ball with his back to the basket, and it was like, Miles, just like reach out, just grab him. Just grab
big old
him.
Target, back to the basket. Seems like a good opportunity there. Stationary.
Oh, it was crazy.
And they didn't foul at the end either, up three. He finally
I know.
But I'm just saying, again, he was a psychology major, not a mathematics
major. Not a math major.
Virginia, but I don't understand either the psychology or the math of that one.
Hopefully he's doing better math when he's flying the plane. When he's doing his
I think he's sold
his navigation.
One thing before we go.
Might want a parachute on the top of Rick's old
is
plane.
Is there anything to say about the fact that the Nuggets have an injury now for Jamal Murray, strained calf, and Reggie Jackson sprained his ankle?
That might be a win.
Well, it's not necessarily a win if Jamal can't play.
That might still be Jamal a win. Just have Jokic play point guard.
Well, he does play point guard. He plays point center.
Aside from one quarter in that series, Jamal Murray's not played well.
Look, I think Minnesota.
It was a hell of a quarter, though.
Assuming Denver gets by the Lakers, preferably for them in game five, so given they've got this, we'll see. Jamal's questionable with a left calf strain. He was grabbing at his calf late in game four. I think Minnesota's got a real shot in that series. And
yeah, I'm not saying I'll pick them, but they absolutely have a shot.
It would behoove Denver to get this thing over with ASAP.
I agree.
Yes.
Because the Wolves are sitting there rested with a deeper team, ready to go, excited for that series. And Denver is now, they let the door open.
Yeah, I don't think they can start it till Saturday at the earliest. So Minnesota's going to have minimum 6 days off.
And by the way, you talk about the Wolves' depth. Naz Reid is the sixth man of the year. Nikhil Alexander-Walker's, I'd have to look to be confident of this, but he might be the sixth man of the first round.
Well, he didn't play his greatest game today, but he was tremendous.
The first three were humdingers. He had the best plus minus in the league through three games of the playoffs. Well,
they got Kyle Anderson, Naz Reid, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker coming off the bench. And I think Michael Malone would die to have any of them coming off his bench.
I agree. Right now. I absolutely agree with that.
But yeah, look, the Lakers, they avoided the 12th straight loss. They cracked the code. Figured out how to beat.
I couldn't believe
Denver.
Those quotes from Darvin.
Congrats. We don't have to figure out which broom to give you because you got to win. And let's see if the Lakers can shock the world and do it again.
Another win on Monday. I will say this, Nuggets, you're awesome. Maybe take the first half of this next game seriously for the first time of the entire series.
Yeah, it's time to finish this up.
Like, they're goal for the whole game.
Their performances in this series, I would say, have been very concerning because they have
say
not
concerning. I would say the lackadaisical until they decided to turn it up.
But I'm talking about in the aggregate, right? Like, you get to the playoffs, like you should
like
be
one
showing
of those aggregate
some
Twitter accounts.
Yes, just like that. You should be showing some sense of urgency, and they really haven't shown any urgency in this series. Now you could argue it's because they just feel very confident about playing the Lakers, but still, like you said, they've won these games by having a good 12 or 15 minutes in the games and coming from behind and winning. And they sort of tried to do it the other night and missed a few layups and a couple wide open threes
and
they couldn't
quite
do it.
Made some plays. I mean, like the Lakers held
them. Oh yeah, no, for sure. The Lakers played well and won that game. I'm not taking anything away. I'm just saying, like, the Lakers have had double digit leads in I think every game or just about every game. Mm-hmm. And the Denver sort of waited around, and then after half, it's like, all right, I guess we'll play in the third quarter now. And then they come back and win the game. It's like, oh, look at the Nuggets doing it again. Like, that's not, if they're playing like that against Minnesota, it's going to be a lot of trouble.
They're bad habits to form.
Yes. And now you mess around. This is the other thing. You play extra games in the playoffs. You mess around. Now Jamal Murray's got this calf issue. Now you're playing every other day this week. Like,
that depth is their weakness.
Yeah. I mean, their starting five is the best in the league. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they got a ton of questions. Peyton Watson is a super exciting defensive player who is a non-threat on offense. Christian Brown, not much of a threat on offense. Reggie Jackson has been awful. Justin Holiday should not be playing in the playoffs. That's their rotation coming off the bench. It's problematic.
What about DeAndre?
He's going to do a great job cheerleading.
Hey, they may need him in this next series.
That will be a problem. If he's playing in playoff games, that will be a problem.
Oh, yeah. He had a moment or two in the finals last year, sir. All right. That's enough for now. That was a fun day today. Hopefully we'll get some
awesome day. A lot of awesome games.
All right. Thank you to Jackson, our producer, for staying up until this late. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon for putting in a lot of hours today. And we will talk to you in a couple of days.
Adios, amigos.